Blog Talk Radio.
He's come a very long way from his early years in East Africa, from a struggling student in his native Kenya to an astute businessman and professional communicator in his adopted homeland in Boise, Idaho. Dr. Vincent Katuku serves as a constant reminder that your living dreams can indeed come true. He didn't let what could have controlled anyone else really become obstacles for him. With simple and plain persistence, he earned his PhD from the University of Wyoming and has distinguished himself in the field of helping individuals live up to their potential. In 1997, Dr. Katuku left corporate America so as to reach people in different organizations, both private and public. Dr. Katuku's knack for storytelling and the ability to inform, to empower, inspire, to give hope and challenges, to encourage people to reach new heights of personal and professional growth have placed him among the nation's leading motivational speakers. Learn more about this remarkable entrepreneur and how he is now giving back to his community in Kenya so that young girls can better their education. Hello, this is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland Thomas. Thank you so much for listening to our show today. We have a hurricane that's sort of out there in the ocean. We're watching what's taking place in Bermuda. We have a lot of rain here, and so all of us up and down the East Coast, we are just bracing ourselves for at least a lot of rain. Hopefully, this hurricane, Joaquin, will not hit landfall in the next couple of days. So stay tuned to your local news broadcast for more information about that, and definitely take cover if you need to. This is a really busy time of year for many people. I'll tell you why. First of all, it's Hispanic Heritage Month, which sort of takes place. It starts in the middle of September, September 15th, goes until October 15th. And it is done that way to commemorate the independence of several of our Central American brothers and sisters and countries in that part of the world, including El Salvador, which I think takes place in September, and several other countries in that region that actually gained independence. So that's why they commemorate and they coordinate the Hispanic Heritage Month to cover a part of September and a part of October. You can Google it, go online, and find out all about its history and the communities that it really impacts. Now, from October 1st, which is today, until the 31st, is also Global Diversity Awareness Month. That is a month, a commemorative month that I created probably 15, 16 years ago. And you can go to my website, tellcarole.com, that's TELLCAROLE, and learn more about how you can demonstrate and implement diversity plans and programs and use them in your communities and your homes any time of the year. We just picked October as that celebratory month, but all of these suggestions and topics that you can use within your companies, your organizations, or your home units as well, your community groups, can be used any time of the year. So go to tellcarole.com, and shortly after this program, we're going to put an actual link on the home page that will take you directly to the page of information that you can download. It's a complete kit that you can download and use in October and certainly use any time of the year. We are also continuing to take reservations for those of you who are traveling to India with us in February during the Massachusetts School Vacation Month. We have a wonderful group of people who have already signed up, and their monthly payments that you can make, and it's going to be a grand, grand trip, and we'd love for you to come with us. That information, again, is either at tellcarole.com or at tellcarole.com, and you'll see all the links that'll take you right to that page and it'll give you all the information, and I will be happy to answer any questions for you. Just go to the website and you can follow the link and then contact me afterward. And then we're gearing up in a little bit more than a month for our November 5th Diversity Multicultural Conference. It's going to be held at the University of Massachusetts on their campus and their student building, beautiful room, the alumni room. This is our ninth conference. It's hard to believe. We've been doing this now nine times since 2008. We have a great lineup for you, including Abraham and Sarah Padini that we're bringing in from India. They're going to talk to us about life in India and the dynamics. So you talk about a diverse country. You can't get more diverse than India. It is a fascinating place. So they're going to be our host when we go to India in February, but we're bringing them here to talk about life in India and all the remarkable humanitarian work that they're doing in southern India. Our closing keynote speaker will be Gary Morton, who is a dynamic young man, been a part of our conference for many years. He is a director at the Liberty Mutual Foundation. Liberty Mutual is one of our sponsors. State Street Corporation is our lead sponsor. There's still time to sponsor the event. I just can go on and on. You can read more about it and learn about it at mssconnect.com, mssconnect.com. We'd love to have you there. It's a great place to network. And we just confirmed Agnes Chang, who is part of the New Bostonians organization, and she's going to talk about the dynamic demographics of Boston and how it's changing with so many immigrants who are coming to this part of the country. So we have a lot going on. Take your pick. This is October, and there's lots to do when it comes to diversity, multiculturalism, and inclusion. Well, one of my favorite countries, where my father lived for 10 years, I have visited twice. I have very strong connections there, and I am really excited to bring this gentleman on board because he was born in Kenya. He's certainly done well here in the United States, but certainly has also learned how to give back now that he has started and created a girls' school that he is supporting back in his homeland. Dr. Vincent Katuku, welcome, Jumbo.
Mzuri sana. Thank you so much. I'm really, really so happy for you to have me here. Thank you so much.
Great. Well, take us back to those early years. Tell us where you're from. For those of you who are listening, as you probably know, Kenya is in East Africa, a very dynamic country. Our president of the United States' father was born in Kenya. He has relatives there, and he had a chance to visit a couple of weeks ago during the summer months. So for many, many reasons, Kenya is just a great place. But tell us exactly where you're from in Kenya and what was life like growing up there.
Well, thank you so much. I really would like to share that. Let's get started with just something you mentioned when you were introducing me.
Yes.
I did live in Wyoming, and that's where I picked my accent. So, and I came to this country, landed in Lamb, Wyoming, and I have never spoken the same way again. That's where I was taught the first time I have an accent. But
fun.
Really, life before Wyoming. Born and raised in about 16 miles east of Nairobi. Now, Kenya is East Africa, so is north of South Africa, and the south of Egypt is next to Somalia, and it also has part of the Indian Ocean, so there's a coastal area there. And the north of it is Ethiopia, the west is Uganda, and the south is Tanzania. A very amazing country. The geographical, just a quick bit of geographical understanding. The land starts with 0 feet above sea level, and you go all the way to 17,000 feet above sea level. So basically, all the diversity of the land also brings diversity of natural resources, and strange enough, also diversity of people's way of life. Because, again, people's way of life is dictated until recently by the what was available locally.
Mm. So what you're saying is that so sea level, Indian Ocean, Mombasa area, zero feet, and then all the way up in terms of the mountain ranges that you have, 17,000 feet.
Mount Kenya,
yes. Wow. I have not been there, but I certainly know where it is. Yes.
I climbed it in 1981, not to the top, but somewhere. Yeah, so I come from about 60 miles east of that the capital city. Now, born there, late 1950s. Now I have lived in America so much that I can't tell my age. But then I went to school. It's challenges, a lot of challenges. Suffered from a lot of illnesses, malaria mainly, and a stomachache. I remember in 1966, I think I lost a whole year of school because of a swollen leg. And I've been talking a lot about that, what happened. And so a lot of challenges. I grew up in a polygamous family, and it's not a picnic situation, and not the way sometimes we think that is sanctioned by the cultures. I also, you and I, we have talked about this, especially after you lost your son, about my own vulnerability, because I did lose three brothers and two sisters.
That's heartbreaking. Good gracious.
Oh, sure. Yeah, so all those things, when I look back, really did affect my school abilities. But then I went to high school. And immediately after I left in high school, it's amazing because in elementary school, I had spent 6 years in three grades. Go to high school, and basically just, I mean, sorry to bring this up, but again, it happened. Really left high school as one of the top students, went to University of Nairobi, got a scholarship from international organizations to come to America. The University of Wyoming also paid part of my PhD. I mean, I've been blessed. So,
That's an amazing story. Amazing story. Let me ask you, Vincent, was your father Muslim? Is that
not
why
at all.
The police?
Not at all.
No.
And thank you so much for mentioning that, because in Kenya, the percentage of Muslims in our country is not more than 10%. And mostly, as you have gone to Kenya, you see them mostly in the coastal area. And that's where the Arabs could come, and they had interaction with the local communities around the coast area.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's such a deep, so we could just have a whole session just about your background and growing up in Kangudo. Is it Kangudo,
that's
Kenya?
That's Kangudo,
60 miles outside of Nairobi, the mountains. I mean, all of that. I'm back there, so we could do that. But we want to fast forward, because clearly the door of opportunity allowed you to leave your family, leave your roots, and come here and start that new chapter in your life, which you've done brilliantly, becoming educated in Wyoming. And then how did you get from Wyoming then to Idaho?
Well, I love that one. I have to really bring it on here. I took a plane. My early background in my career, I was a scientist. I was an environmental scientist. And I was employed by Idaho Power, the power company here locally, to do an environmental impact assessment for them. And then when I was there, I joined Toastmasters. And in the Toastmasters process, I really discovered, all people taught me that I was a great storyteller. I could connect with the people. I could tell people something in a way that they would think about it. I had never known about motivational speaking. I never knew that you can be paid to speak. Then I think 1993 is when I learned about motivational speaking. In 1994, I met with somebody who was a member of NSA. In 1995, I joined NSA. And then I attended my first conference in 1997 after I had just left corporate America. And, of course, life has never been the same.
Right. We actually joined NSA. NSA is the National Speakers Association for our listeners, and that is an organization for those who are paid to speak professionally. So both Vincent and I joined that organization the same year. I also, this is our 20th anniversary.
We met 1997, the very first time I was there, and we talked a lot. We spent some time together.
Right, right. We certainly did, and lots of connections, and certainly the Kenya connections. You've actually gone all the way in NSA. You have their highest they have one of their distinct members to be a certified speaking professional, which is the logging of all of the work that you're doing and the clients who you've met, and all of that information has to be tabulated and then turned in order for you to receive your CSP designation. That means that you have done well leaving corporate America and becoming a professional speaker. Tell us how that journey has been for you, particularly, I mean, there are not that many black people in Idaho. I know two, you and someone else who lives in Boise, and not that many. So how's the journey been for you being a black person in that part of the country as a professional speaker?
Yes. One thing is this, unless you are different in this world, you can never make a difference. Unless you are different, you cannot make a difference. In whatever you are doing, whether spiritual pursuits, professional endeavors, or personal goals, you must look at your uniqueness and then use that uniqueness. I came here, and basically, the amazing thing was when I was writing my first book, it was East African Folktales. And I was writing as stories, and the people asked me, I remember someone asking me, how can you write a book like that in Idaho? I always try to buy it. And I thought, my goodness, this is the greatest opportunity. Why? Because nobody else is writing a book like that.
There you go.
So I've been able to really use that diversity perspective, I am aware, and basically become part of the community, and it has embraced me. I want to really talk about this because it's amazing. The thing is, not even just me. Think about this. My three daughters, each one of them ended up being a school leader. My son was of one of the largest teams in the state, football, as a junior class player. He was in junior class, and he was made as team captain. And of course, again, he was also a team captain in his senior year. So the key here is become part of that community, because I truly do believe each individual has something they can share with this world. But the key is, do you have the courage to be part of the world you are in?
And you clearly are a citizen of the world. Let me ask you, Vincent, is there a core African community in Idaho that you connect with? What are those dynamics in Idaho in particular?
Yeah, we have. Oh my, we have. In fact, there is a Nigerian friend of mine who is a magistrate, and we came almost at the same time. He came to run to be as an athlete in one of the universities. There's also another guy who came from Tanzania. He came as an athlete at the local university here at Boise State. We have a good group, and in about 1999, I created a program that would bring all the Africans from Africa once a year, the day of the weekend after Thanksgiving, and we cook the kind of food we are used to in Africa, and perform the kind of cultural practices we did, and the kind of just connect that way. But because of my traveling back to Africa and many other places in my speaking, that has not happened for a while right now. But the last few years, my connection with them actually has been amazingly rewarding. Why? There are refugees coming from Congo, coming from Somalia, coming from Sudan, refugees coming from Rwanda, Burundi, and they have a lot of challenges. I have been able to help them get used to the American life a little bit. I have an amazing personal connection there, because one group from Congo, I found that they had a small group of kids who can sing, and I helped them get known, and also went back to Africa, came with materials, and had them made for them to be singing with their native clothing.
Oh, that, you know, I'm just thinking about it. I'm getting chills just thinking about what you're saying, because here you came all those years ago not knowing anybody, and you've done well and you're very successful. You and your wife have a daycare center. And now as this new population is coming from different parts of Africa, you're not only able to help them here in the country, but you're certainly helping people, which we're going to talk about in a few minutes, back in your home country. I'm doing work at Doane College now in Lincoln, Nebraska, in Crete, Nebraska. They also have a campus center in Lincoln, Nebraska. I love the work that I'm doing there, and I'm learning so much. And in Lincoln, there is a major refugee resettlement center that I have now visited. I was there a couple of days ago, and there are people there from the Congo who are there, and Afghanistan, and Iraq, and Syria. So those who are here in the East Coast don't realize what's going on in the Midwest and certainly out West in terms of people who are moving into those areas and able to resettle. So you're a touch point with them as well. Tell us about that school in Kenya that you're a part of, Vincent Katuku.
Yeah, the school, my goodness, where do we start here? 2000, now I talked about coming to United States 1980s. I just want to let your listeners remember this. 1980s, AIDS and HIV were not part of our lives. It's the year now. And in Africa, when I was living there, I had never known anybody who had been affected. But from time to time, I started learning about it, what was going on. I lost some family members, friends of mine. But then 2010 is when I went back there. And to say I was devastated is understatement. I found because of poverty, when somebody is suffering from AIDS or HIV, the family uses all the resources they have to help that person stay alive. And by the time they die, the family can have nothing left. And because of that, sometimes children will pass to go to high school after they do the 8th grade exam. Elementary school is free. And then going to high school, you have sponsored a kid. High school is you have to pay. And there's some
ranges
that,
That's right.
It ranges from 500 all the way to 1500 a year. But that includes food and tuition and everything else.
Right.
So, but what was hard for me, I have three daughters. And one of the things I've done with my daughters, I've trained them since when they were young. I want to educate them in such a way that they marry a man because of love. I don't want my daughters to marry because they want to be supported.
Mm-hmm.
And then in Kenya, I go and find young girls being kept in 8th grade so that they can just grow taller and get married.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there, a mother committed suicide and left 6 children without a mother or a father, because the father was never known, and left 6 children without a parent, because she did not have $150 to pay the tuition for one semester.
The tuition fee, I know all about that. That's tragic.
So,
6 children.
So I just came back here very depressed. In fact, that is probably, I should say this, the first time in my life to question God on the meaning of life. But after a few months of really feeling low, I decided to create Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope. Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope. An organization that is get 100% to help children go to high school, but now we have about 36 in university. We have a total of 285 students. But then 2013, I went there and sat down with them. Like the book of Ezekiel, it talks about when Ezekiel was caught in the spirit and they went to a place where people were in captivity. And the Bible says that, and I sat with them for 7 days, and I was astonished. And I sat with those girls and those boys in Kenya, and I was completely shocked. If a girl can miss school because she doesn't have personal hygienic supplies, if when schools close, they don't want to go home because there's nothing to eat.
Right.
And that is when I thought, if God can help me, I will get a girl's high school, boarding school, and they will get all the supplies they need. Then if they can't go home, they will have a place to stay. And then I found a facility. The owner sold it for $1.3 million. I decided that I'm going to look for that 1.3 million. And as I'm speaking with you, we already have the school, and I'm remaining to pay only 350. I've paid everything else.
Wow. That's so remarkable. I'm just thinking about you went, we're talking about Ezekiel in the Bible and just those tie-ins. You realize the needs that are there in Kenya. You and I both know my young Kenyan son, Naftal. I was able to put him through high school along with my friend Sandra Jenkins and his brothers. We also identified friends who put his brother through school. So for us, it doesn't seem like a lot of money, but if you live in those communities and your income level is of such a nature, it can be insurmountable. So a couple of $100 or $1,500 can be quite a fee that is unsustainable for those who are living there. And Caring Hearts Hands of Hope is now providing that hope for 285. All girls in Kenya, Vincent, or boys
actually,
and girls?
I have boys and girls. We have more boys. Girls because I saw that, and my mother was denied education because she was a girl. But mm-hmm. we do have about 115 boys. So we do have 100, yeah. And in fact, most of our students in university are boys.
That's amazing. How can someone give us the website, first of all, for the school? Because
yes.
I'm sure we'll have listeners who will want to know more about
it. On, the school, you can see it on the website. But mainly, the school is part of the bigger organization. The school is Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope. I mean, Caring Hearts High School. Caring Hearts, like I love you with my heart. Caring Hearts with High School. And the organization is Caring Hearts and the Hands of Hope. Caring Hearts and the Hands of Hope. Because we care with our hearts and we work with our hands, and that's what we give.
Right. So for our listeners, they can go to Caring Hearts and HandsOfHope.com. Just spell it out like that, Caring Hands and Caring Hearts and HandsOfHope.com. And then Vincent's website is Kituku, his name, KITUKU.com. And at that website, you will see the logo for the school's, the logo for the school, and you can click through and get more information that way. I wanted to put that out there because I know that there are going to be people listening who will want to find out more about your school. So you've gotten the mortgage payment way down. You're continuing to pay that. So what's on the horizon in terms of the school and the work that you're doing in Kenya?
Well, the thing here is I am now in part two of the school. Once we finish this payment, which I'm hoping that I can clear by the end of December, if not so, I still have up to June to finish up. But what I'm looking for is to do construction. It's very easy once you get the land. It's very manageable. I'm not going to do another capital campaign. I can go to different friends of mine and basically just build one class every year because I want to double the school and then build a dormitory for boys. And that is what I want there. And also I want to build it in such a way that there is some income coming from somewhere so that if I'm not alive 5 years from now, the school can continue without me.
Wow, that makes sense. Makes sense. So a sustainable school that will go on for years to come. Vincent Kituku, thank you so much for being a guest on my program. This is amazing. Your story is amazing. You can find out more about him at kituku.com. That is kituku.com, KITUKU.com. Or find out more about this wonderful school, Caring Hearts and Hands of Hope. com to see how you can be of benefit and service to the children of Kenya. Vincent, thank you so much, and all the best you're doing.
Okay, thank you so much for having me, and I wish you the best in life.
All right, take care now.
Thank
Alrighty.
You. Thanks.
That's an example of how one person is really making a difference and certainly has not forgotten his home continent and certainly not forgotten his home country, whether he's reaching out to the children of the Congo who are living in his region in Idaho or taking care of the students who are going to his school in Kenya to an example of somebody who's really making the difference. I hope that you will make a difference in your community, that you will make a difference throughout the rest of this year and into 2016 as well. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and we will see you next week for a new show. Go out there and make it a great day. Take care.